Wake Up America, time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you Information Please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps plus a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, continuing on its wayward course, Information Please, spontaneous as ever, offers tonight as its panel of experts John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, the sage of Western Connecticut, as our two regulars. And as our guests, we welcome first the author of the brilliant new bestseller, The Walsh Girls, Mrs. Elizabeth Janeway, and as our second guest, the distinguished composer and music critic, Mr. Deems Taylor. Before we begin, ladies and gentlemen, I want to advise you very strongly to listen extra carefully this evening because during the course of the program, a world-shaking, more or less, announcement will be made. And now we're going to begin with a question from Miss Gemma Jackson of Salt Lake City. Where in poetry or song do you find these color combinations? His hair is red, his eyes are blue. Mr. Adams.
Kelly.
Kelly is the boy. Where do you find Kelly?
Has anybody here seen Kelly?
That is the one, yes. His hair is red, his eyes are blue. And his nationality, Mr. Adams?
And he is Irish through and through.
That is the one, yes. Now, here's another color combination. Their heads are green and their hands are blue. Their heads are green and their hands are blue. Whose heads and hands, Mrs. Janeway?
I know what they did. They went to sea in a sieve, but I can't think who they are.
You don't know how to identify them. I think they did go to sea in a sieve. Who went to sea in a sieve, Mr. Taylor?
Oh, they went to sea in a sieve. There's something or other by Edward Lear.
Jumblies are the Jumblies.
Yes. Jumblies. Mr. Kieran, you were going to say...
I was going to say the Jumblies.
Jumblies is right. Edward Lear's the Jumblies. The wheels are yellow, the upholstery's brown. Where would you find Mrs. Janeway?
Oh. In Oklahoma, the story with the fringe on top.
Very good, yes, that's quite right. Rodgers and Hammerstein's smash hit the Oklahoma, the story with the fringe on top. Well, that was just for practice. That was too easy. Try this one from Orson Angel of Bronxville, New York. Where would you be going if you took a famous trip with two people named Abraham and Stephen? Abraham and Stephen. Mr. Kieran.
Well, you might be going on a circuit in a debate around 1856 or 8.
With whom?
Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas.
Yes.
Stephen A. Douglas, the little giant.
Quite right. Through what state would you be traveling, mainly?
Illinois, I
think
is.
Entirely. Through Illinois, yes, quite right. Now, suppose you were going on a trip with two other famous people named, first names, Beatrice and Sidney. Beatrice and Sidney, Mrs. Janeway.
You might be going to Russia with the Webbs.
Yes, Beatrice and Sidney Webb took a famous trip through Russia. When was that? Do you remember?
Oh, I think it was in the early 1930s.
35. And what was the result of the trip?
A large book.
Yes. Have you read it, Mr. Janeway?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
A very large. Mr. Taylor, you've read it?
Certainly not.
Nothing like the way we plug books on this show. Yes, they wrote a very long and presumably good book on Soviet communism, as it was called, in 1935. Are the Webbs still alive, Mrs. Janeway? Or...
I believe so.
Both of them? I have a feeling that one of that famous couple recently departed in this life. Meriwether and William are two other people with whom, Mr. Adams?
Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark. You'll be going through what part of the country with them?
To Oregon and so forth?
Yes, through the Northwest. And about when would you be traveling?
In the 1840s.
Oh, I think it was before that. Mrs. Janeway?
37.
Before that.
Oh, it was before that. It was, didn't Jefferson send them?
That's right. It was therefore about what, when would you say?
1807.
1803 to 1805, the first famous trip of Meriwether, Lewis, and William Clark. Well, try this one. I can't seem to stump you. Mariella Foster of Oakland, California, wants to know, who in fiction loved Catherine but married Isabella? Loved Catherine, but married Isabella. You have to know two girls, one named Catherine, one named Isabella. One was loved and the other was married. Delicate distinction.
I know one who didn't think much of Bianca and married Catherine, but...
It won't do. I'd love to hear about that sometime, though, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Curran?
Was that King of Spain?
No, it sounds sort of as if it
yeah,
might be, Mr.
Curran. Yeah, of Catherine of Aragon.
And Isabella sounds like a Spanish name, too.
It was.
It's a famous novel. To wit, Wuthering Heights, by Emily Bronte. Remember the hero, or rather the villain?
I'm on page 18 of it right now.
Any good? Well, I don't want to give the plot away, Mr. Adams, but you know there's a chap named Heathcliff? He pops up around.
Oh, that's the girl who's Kathy.
Now, Heathcliff, he loved Catherine Earnshaw, but he married Isabella Linton.
Now, that spoiled the whole book.
Yes, we have spoiled the whole book.
I wish you hadn't told me how it came out.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you were listening, Adams. How about, well, we got that one wrong. How about someone, this again is in fiction, in literature, who loved Dido, but married Lavinia? Marrying a girl named Lavinia is a perilous. Mrs. Janeway?
Must have been Aeneas. Surely there weren't two Didos around.
No, the one was enough for Aeneas. There was just one Dido. And who was Lavinia?
The woman he married, I presume.
Yes, that's quick of you. Mr. Taylor.
Lavinia was the old name for Italy. He landed in Italy.
You can't marry an old name for Italy, Mr.
Taylor. Wait a minute. He landed Italiam something profibus Lavinique venit. He came to Lavinia.
But who was Lavinia as a person?
She was a country.
You can't marry a country. Mr. Kieran?
You can say my country, 'tis of thee.
Well, I thought it was a place. Was Lavinia petit ad Italiam venit.
I'd love to hear a little English on this program. Can't get a word of English out of these people.
Well, it's the only one.
It's Greek to me.
Lavinia was the daughter of King Latinus. And I imagine that her name was also the name of a part of Italy. And Dido was the gal whom he left. Yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm. How about somebody
she
who...
was careless with matches.
Can we get you away from ancient Rome for a minute now, Mr. Taylor? Who in fiction loved Marvin but married Kay? This is rather more modern than Virgil. Mr. Janeway.
Oh, one of Marquand's characters. Pullum, H.M. Pullum.
That's right. Doesn't any of you gentlemen read current fiction?
Incessantly.
But you just don't remember the character's
name. But this Janeway
name.
Woman answers everything. I mean, we don't have to work tonight.
But I like Hedy Lamarr. That's how I remember.
You like what?
Hedy Lamarr. She was Marvin in the movies.
You don't look like Levant, but you answer the way he does. Well, we got 2 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Mrs. Pauline Saltzman of Grand Rapids, Michigan? This is kind of easy. I think we ought to get Paul on it. Now, these musical selections that Mr. Kahn is going to play for us, each one of them should suggest a way in which Germany is expected to collapse. In other words, they should indicate a way in which Germany is going to lose. What is it? Let's have the first. Well, we have any number of hands. Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's over there.
Yes, and
the American invading force, along with the British invading force, when they go over that channel, they...
Should turn the trick.
Right.
Right. Let's hope that that will be one of the ways in which Germany collapses. And now the second. Mr. Taylor.
Well, that indicates that she will be conquered by the Tsar's army, which I think is hardly probable.
Well, stretching your imagination
a
little.
It is the ancient Russian national anthem.
And it's from what? That is played...
It's written by a man named Lvov.
I beg your pardon?
By a man named Lvov. I can't help it. He spells it L-V-O-F.
Well, it's a town. It's pronounced Wolf.
Pronounced Wolf?
No, Alexander II, I think, heard the Austrian national anthem.
Yeah.
And
is that the Haydn one?
Mr. Lvov, will you please write Russia a national anthem like Haydn's Austrian national anthem, or else? And so Lvov wrote it.
I love to hear you say Lvov. That's the only reason I'm listening to all this. And isn't that, you'd find that in what larger work by a classical Russian composer?
The 1812 Overture.
The 1812 Overture. So it means a Russian victory.
A
not
Russian
necessarily
victory.
A Tsarist one. How about the third musical selection? had his hand up at once, then, huh?
By revolution.
How do you make that out?
That's the Chopin revolutionary etude.
Yes, revolution, collapse from within. Maybe they'll collapse in all those three ways at once. That would be best, wouldn't it?
Then you'd have a medley.
Then they get $57 and more bonds. All right, that gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Cora Kling of New York City. Recite for us lines of poetry that mention 4 different units of length or distance. Any line of verse mentioning any unit of length or distance. Mr. Adams, start us off.
Your merry heart goes something or other, your something goes a mile off.
Yeah.
Very bad.
That's approximately it, together with a something.
Well, it's a mile off anyway.
Mile is in there, that's quite right. Mrs. Janeway?
Standing with reluctant feet where the brook and river meet.
Feet, very good.
Like,
yeah,
12 inches.
Very good. Mr. Taylor?
Half a league onward. That's a league and a half.
Yeah, that's a league and a half. Very generous. Mr. Curran?
I don't want to play in your yard. I don't love you anymore.
Oh, Mr. Curran. Now, this is a question for our Heinz reporter. Ben Grauer, I ask this on behalf of an infant epicure who wants to know if there isn't some food he can enjoy without giving up ration points.
What a lead, Mr. Fadiman. The obvious answer is yes. There is a new, unrationed addition to the list of Heinz baby foods. It's Heinz pre-cooked cereal. In the days when we were young, if you can remember, a cereal intended for baby had to be cooked and cooked and cooked. But Heinz cereal requires no cooking. Simply stir it up with a little hot milk or a bit of the baby's formula, and there it is. No fuss, no work, no ration points. But seriously speaking, Heinz deliciously flavored pre-cooked cereal is an extremely valuable addition to a baby's diet because it's made of whole grains. Several different kinds of whole grain cereals scientifically processed for easy digestibility. And it's fortified with extra amounts of iron, riboflavin, and thiamin. So you see, H.J. Heinz Company isn't playing favorites for any age group. All along, there have been a number of unrationed Heinz varieties. Condiments, pickles, relishes, and such to delight the grown-ups. And now, there's the new Heinz pre-cooked cereal for the infant epicure. Does that answer your question?
Completely. Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from L.J. Hurto of Manville, Rhode Island. What members of the animal kingdom, Mrs. Janeway and gentlemen, have species or varieties known as the following? The first set is Emperor and Viceroy, member of the animal kingdom, having those species. I have two hands. Mr. Taylor?
Butterflies.
Butterflies. Is that right, Mr. Kieran?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran.
It's okay. Mr. Taylor, how do you happen to know that? I'd like to know.
Well, I used to have two rather disheveled specimens of those stuck on pins in my collection when I was about 14.
Did you collect butterflies as a boy?
Assiduously for about a year, yes.
Mr.
They
Kieran?
Never turned out very well.
The correct term for the common superior of the viceroy is not the emperor, but the monarch.
Oh. Uh-huh.
I mean, we have to change all this card?
He has to top something.
Well, there's an emperor penguin, but I haven't heard of a viceroy penguin.
I don't think penguins come into this. You mean there are no emperor butterflies?
Well, there may be because there are thousands and thousands of species, but I know the monarch and the viceroy, which is a mimic of the monarch. It's patterned a great deal like it, you know. Just a little bit smaller, but the colors and the pattern.
You know.
Well, I had a monarch, but he was very large, and so I promoted him.
Made him king size out of it.
Made him emperor, yes.
Modern design. How about a member of the animal kingdom, two members, that have varieties known as striped and calico? Striped and calico what? Members of the animal kingdom. If you had a collection of this, Mr. Taylor, I'd be greatly surprised. Mr. Adams?
A zebra.
A zebra. Calico zebra.
I've
never heard of a calico zebra.
One is a bass.
Yes, the bass.
A bass.
Yes, a stick to bass.
Well, I wasn't collecting butterflies, I was catching bass.
Striped and calico bass. Yes, that's quite right. Why did you let Mr. Adams say zebra?
I just thought I'd like to
give him a chance. You know. What I'm waiting for is a question which will permit you to say LaBeouf again, Mr. And now, what members of the animal kingdom have species known as cinnamon and also honey? Cinnamon and honey. Mrs. Janeway.
Bears.
Bears, yes. Mr. Akiran, can you...
Well, a honey bear is not a bear, that's all. A cinnamon bear is. Well, a honey bear doesn't belong to the bear family.
You know, sometimes you're a disrupting influence on this program. You mean a honey bear isn't really a bear?
It isn't a bear, no.
Well, why do they call it a honey bear, then?
Well, it's a small animal that looks somewhat like a bear, like many other animals look like bears that aren't.
Mrs. Janeway, do you want to defend your bear against his allegations?
No, I was just wondering whether a honey bear wasn't the same thing as a kinkajou.
And if it were, where would that land us?
Yes,
I think that is another name
for the kinkajou.
You used to know a kinkajou?
Yes, slightly. He used to come into a bar in the village and drink brandy straight. Not by himself.
That was Art Young.
Was that Art Young?
Mrs. Janeway, this is a sober program. You can't see these kinkajous in bars on information, please. Oh, no. You know, I think that's right. It isn't really a bear, but we talk of it as a bear. There's other members of the no vegetable kingdom that have cinnamon and honey. Buns, cinnamon buns, and honey buns. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3.
We don't have buns on this program.
Mr. Janeway does. Try this one from Carl Peter Koch of Chicago, whose career may be described briefly as follows. Sculptor, thief, murderer. That means he was all 3 of those things, presumably in that order, more or less. Sculptor, thief, murderer, Mr. Taylor.
Benvenuto Cellini.
Quite right. Can you prove it?
Well, if I had a copy of his memoirs, I'd prove it and you'd regret it. But
well, we know he was a famous sculptor.
He was one of the great goldsmiths of his time. Yeah. He made a statue of Perseus.
Very true.
Which still stands in the Loggia dei Lanzi in Florence.
If the Germans haven't taken it away.
Which they probably have.
And how do we know that he was a thief?
Well, he cheerfully, rather cheerfully says so.
Yes, he does. And how do we know he was a murderer?
Well, he's with... Great, with even greater cheerfulness, he describes.
Yes, he killed at least
one of his
at
more tasty murders. Yes,
you're quite right. Benvenuto Cellini. Now here is another description of a career poet, and again thief and murderer. A man who was poet, thief, and murderer.
F. P. Adams. he's getting warm.
Mr. Adams.
Dion.
Who?
Dion.
Dion's right. Spell him for me.
Luff. D-I-O-O-N, pronounced Luff.
First name, Mr. Adams?
Francois.
Yes, pronounced Francois. How do we know that he was all 3 of those things?
He said so, too.
Well, I don't think he did. We do have some record of...
Yes, he did.
Obviously, he did say so, Mr. Kieran?
Robert.
No, he never confessed to killing anybody. He admitted a few peccadillos in a thieving way and roistering.
A good deal of roistering, whatever that is.
What is roistering?
I don't know.
I've always wanted to roister.
I think that's one of those things that shouldn't come up on this program,
I think it
too.
Can only be done in months with an R in them, or perhaps 2 R's.
Had your roister this month?
Yes.
And now someone whose career may be described... this gets worse and worse. We've had sculptor, thief, murderer, poet, thief, murderer. Now we have worst of all, poet, fascist, and traitor. Poet, fascist, traitor. Mrs. Janeway.
D'Annunzio, possibly? He was at least a poet and a fascist.
He's a poet, some people think so.
He's a better fascist.
Than he was. He never been a traitor.
I lost track of him around there, I'm afraid.
And he was probably sorry he was, because he tried to make people not lose
poet,
track of him
fascist,
for most of his life.
Traitor.
Poet, fascist, traitor. It is Mr. Taylor.
Ezra Pound.
Ezra Pound. Who is Ezra Pound? Let's name
him. He is one of those people that have a great influence without ever doing anything very hot of their own. He has influenced American poetry very decidedly.
Yes, that's
in the
true.
Past 20 years.
Quite true.
He's a show-off. He's
true.
Disliked him on sight.
Excellent taste, Mr.
He has been broadcasting for Italy,
yes,
for the fascist regime.
Quite right.
And is now being, and has just been, you might say, outlawed.
Yes,
more or less, by the FBI.
Yes, he has been adjudged by the FBI to be a traitor.
As treason, yes.
That's quite right. Well, that cleans up these nasty individuals. You know, Cellini and Vio sound pretty nice.
Yeah.
As compared with Mr. Pound. How about this one from Paul R. McCulley of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? I think that's rather easy. We ought to get all of them. I'm going to give you the first and last initial and middle name of each of these persons. You want to identify them. J. Charles T. Who is that? J. Charles T. Mr. Kieran.
John Charles Thomas.
And is there anyone who doesn't know Mr. Thomas?
I should say not.
I should hope not. Mm-hmm. Quite right. Joe, John Charles Thomas, the singer of whom we're all very proud. And how about H. Agard W.? H. Agard W., Mr. Adams.
Mr. Wallace. Henry,
yes.
Agard Wallace.
Henry Agard Wallace. And W. Lewis W. W. Lewis W. Mrs. Janeway.
Wendell Wilkie.
Wendell Lewis Wilkie, that's quite right. And by the way, the mention of Mr. Wilkie's name, or rather his initials, reminds me of that world-shaking announcement I mentioned earlier in the program. The announcement is that Mr. Wilkie himself will be with us on the show next week, but under somewhat extraordinary circumstances. Be sure to listen to the end of the show if you want to know what the circumstances will be. I believe that's advertising technique.
They call that a teaser.
It's a teaser, yes. Try this one. From Marion Hemendinger of Brooklyn, New York. Each of the following names is associated with a celebrated artist or performer, living or dead. Name the artist or stage personality in each case. Now, the first is Razumovsky. Razumovsky. Mr. Taylor.
Well, that's associated with Ludwig van Beethoven.
How?
Because he wrote a series of quartets for a patron called Count Razumovsky.
That's exactly right.
Which were known and are now known as the Razumovsky Quartets.
Yes. Who was Count Razumovsky? Do you
he
remember?
Was the guy that commissioned Beethoven to write six quartets.
Very, very canny. He had another job.
He was a count.
He was a count, yes. He was the Russian ambassador at Vienna during...
A certified public count.
So much for Razumovsky. Zanobi del Giocondo. Mr. Kieran.
That La Gioconda? The,
You go right ahead, Mr. Kieran. Don't you pay any attention to
Mr.
Taylor. Well,
yes, it's hanging on the south wall of the Louvre. Germans haven't taken the picture.
Picture of whom?
No, this is Giocondo.
Giocondo. Zanobi del Giocondo.
That's a male smiler.
It's male, all right. Oh,
I now, got who the is wrong.
That? You got the wrong
matter
smiler.
Of fact, you're on the right track, Mr. Kieran.
Well, he was the husband then of La Gioconda.
Yes.
La Gioconda, whatever you want to call her.
Yeah, sure. Otherwise known. Yes. We have another name for her in the famous picture by Leonardo.
Mona Lisa.
Yes, and of course the artist who...
He was Mr. Lisa.
Leonardo.
He was Monsieur Lisa instead of Mona Lisa. Yes, he was the husband of Mona Lisa, and Leonardo painted...
That's right.
Painted the wife, Leonardo da Vinci.
How about a small picture at that.
Yeah.
How about Professor Gainsbourg? Professor Gainsbourg. Does anyone know who Professor Gainsbourg is?
Gainsbourg?
Gainsbourg. Does none of you listen to your colleagues on the air?
Certainly not.
Professor Gainsbourg is associated with Willie Howard, who is considerably funnier than all of us put together.
Oh, yes. It pays to be ignorant.
It does sometimes, but not on this show, Mr. Well, it's the name that he uses in his famous comic series of French lessons. Have seated. Did we get...
Oh, that's right.
We got 2 out of 3 on that one. Now, this question, scientific Grauer. I have here a copy of a volume entitled Nutritional Charts, published by the Research Department of H.J. Heinz Company. When was it first published? 10 years ago? 5 years ago? 2 years ago? Don't guess, for I think you'd guess wrong.
I'm not going to guess, Kip, because I know that the first edition of Heinz Nutritional Charts came out in 1934, 10 years ago. Incidentally, it's a pretty well-known volume, now in its 11th edition. Many of the leading medical and nursing schools in our country and Canada use it as textbook material. Well, all that goes to show that nutrition is not new to the makers of Heinz 57 varieties. And just a few months ago, for instance, the Heinz Company introduced a new pre-cooked cereal for babies. And that cereal was the result of 5 years of the most painstaking research carried on by Heinz's own scientists working in cooperation with the Mellon Institute of Pittsburgh. As you'd expect, the cereal is a scientific triumph as far as food value, digestibility, vitamins, and minerals are concerned. But in addition to all that, it's light, it's fluffy, it tastes delicious. A great deal of science, research, and skill go into the making of all Heinz 57 varieties, but best of all, they're really good to eat.
Thank you, Ben Grauer.
And now, Mr. Janeway and gentlemen, try this one from Johnson Haywood of New York City. Let's get all on this. Where would you most likely be if you heard these words uttered? And the first phrase is, take two shots. Where would you be? Mr. Kieran?
You'd be referee of a duel.
At a duel?
Sure, take two shots, one apiece.
It's a possibility, but I don't think the phrase is actually...
Well, I'll give you another one.
All right.
You might be standing on a first tee with a fellow whom you thought you could beat at golf.
I see. It's an insult, then, you mean?
Well, no, it's a financial adventure.
I get it. Now, where else? Is there any other sport in which the phrase take two shots is used? Mrs. Janeway.
Oh, in tennis.
No.
In tennis,
that's,
I think
what
not.
What am I thinking of, isn't
that's
it?
Two serves.
Two serves. Take
they
two.
They do say take two if
yes.
you have a net. Mr. Kieran?
Mr. Pat Kennedy at Madison Square Garden with a gracious gesture might say to a basketball player, take two shots.
Yes, if a foul is committed
that's
against
right.
a player.
Or if you use cocaine.
Or use cocaine. Now, try this one. Suppose you heard this phrase uttered, the gentleman from Arkansas. Where would you be? Mr. Adams.
You would be in the House of Representatives.
Yes,
And the gentleman of Arkansas would be asked to yield.
He might be asked. He might be asked to yield, or he might be recognized.
Not if it was Mr. Fulbright.
Try this one. Suppose you heard this phrase, begin writing. Where would you be? Begin writing. Mr. Janeway.
I think you'd be taking an exam.
Yes, it's the regular phrase for starting an examination in school. How about this one? From L.M. Freed of Rochester, New York. Again, get all. To what would you be referring if you made mention of each of the following? First, the Curzon line. The Curzon line, Mr. Kieran.
You would be discussing a line separating Poland from Russia, the one that was laid out by, I think, by Lord Curzon, but I think he was the British Foreign Minister at the time.
Yes,
wasn't
when was that?
Around 1920.
Yes, just after the last war, 1919, I think it was. And how has this line of many years ago come up again?
Well, Russia has proposed that now for the settlement after this war.
Of the Russian-Polish dispute.
That's right.
And it's still pretty much up in the air, isn't it?
It is.
Now, how about, here's another line, to wit, any line. What would you be referring to, Mr. Adams?
To a die.
To a dye, yes. It's a liquid obtained. It's used in the making of dyes. Well, how do you get aniline, Mr. Kieran? You know?
Coal tar product, derivative of the breakdown of petroleum, I believe.
Yes. Where do you think it comes from, Mr. Adams?
You get it from anil.
And you know what anil is?
Yes, it's a blue dye.
Is that right, Mr. Kieran?
Found in many a crossword.
He's overawing me, Mr. Adams is. And here's a third line. We've had Curzon line, aniline. How about mighty line? Mighty line. Mr. Kieran.
Marlowe's mighty line.
That right, Mr. Adams?
That's right.
Oh, I guess that's right. Where do you find the phrase?
Yes. You'll find that in a poem by Ben Jonson addressed to his master, William Shakespeare.
Yes, Marlowe's mighty line. Marlowe, a contemporary, slightly before Shakespeare.
The full line is mighty line of rose.
I guess that's the one, Mr. Taylor. I guess that's all we have time for, and a good thing, too. Thank you, Mr. Janeway and Mr. Taylor, for the fine cooperation this evening. You both brought us luck, because tonight the H.J. Hines Company has paid out nothing in war bonds, and that means no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, ladies and gentlemen, next week, in addition to our trio of experts, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant, we will have as our special guest the man who knows all the answers, provided they are written on a card for him, no other than your humble servant. And, ladies and gentlemen, the master of ceremonies for the evening, our boss for a night, will be Mr. Wendell L. Wilkie. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to information, please, at 5...